Chuck and Julie, bringing you the truth, straight up.
I'm Julie Hayden, and I'm working
at... An Emmy-winning former investigative reporter, a highly successful trial attorney, and publisher of a major Denver area newspaper. They've been partners as talk show hosts and in marriage, as parents, for over 10 years, providing thought-provoking information, opinion, and entertainment live, local, and interactive. Everyone's voice is always welcome on the Chuck and Julie Show.
Hey, welcome to the Chuck and Julie Show. This is Mark Poff, subbing in for them today, and I just want to thank them for letting me do it again. It's such a nice change of pace for me and the thing that I do now with consulting and stuff. And here in a few minutes, John St. Augustine is going to join me, and we're going to talk about the Columbine shooting, and I'll explain all that. John was asked as a part of a team to do a reinvestigation of what really happened at Columbine because there were some accusations being made. And that's exactly what's going to happen with Uvalde. And right now they're transitioning. This is something I spoke about last week, is, you know, everybody was mourning this tragic event. And then they're going to start transitioning over to outrage, with, you know, anger, and they're going to want heads to roll. They're going to want to know who's at fault, other than the shooter, and they want to blame everybody. And now the DOJ is going to do an investigation, and who knows what craziness they're going to come up with. But so first off, I want to talk about that briefly and about gun laws. Now, I'm a retired cop. I was a cop for 17 years. I was a detective for 10 years. I would not call myself a gun enthusiast. I love weapons. Wait a minute. I probably just contradicted myself with that statement. I do love my guns, but I'm not all about weapons. So if you were to come talk to me and ask me all kinds of questions, a lot of times I would say, you know, I don't know, you know, because I'm not into guns that much. I'm kind of into other things. But I do have, not that I should be admitting this, I do have multiple AR-15s, and they're excellent platforms. And I will tell you, I've used them for things other than law enforcement. I did purchase my first one, as I would call it, an entry weapon or a long rifle for the back of my car to use if I got into any events that would justify the use of that weapon. The one time that I really needed an assault rifle, I didn't have one and ended up having to fight someone over their assault rifle and took it from them, thank goodness. But since then, since joining law enforcement, I've purchased other AR-15s, shotguns, all different kinds of shotguns, pump shotguns, semi-automatic shotguns. I have a few handguns, and I do like my weapons, and some are just cool. I mean, some are just cool weapons to have, and they're a lot of fun to go out and shoot. So talking about the stupid assault rifle stuff, I've used my AR-15 to go hog hunting down in Texas, and it's a great platform for that. And 30 round magazines are actually awesome for doing it because you know that you can shoot pigs from helicopters down in Texas, and obviously 30 round magazines would be fine. And I have plenty. Well, I shouldn't be telling you everything that I have, but. So I'm totally against banning AR-15s. I mean, and to say that they're only weapons of war, it is a very ignorant statement from people who don't understand the weapon system. I mean, it's an excellent system. I've shot an AK-47. I would venture to say that that's probably less of a good platform for hunting than an AR-15 because of the .223 round is an excellent round for pigs, coyotes, and other type of varmints to be shooting. It's actually a great one for prairie dog shooting. But this is what I wanted to say is I'm not someone who's opposed to realistic gun laws that make sense. Like maybe we should have some special knowledge of who has machine guns. I get that. And again, Biden saying that you couldn't buy a cannon is probably one of the stupidest statements I've ever heard, because Pawn Stars, you can go out and see the video. Pawn Stars bought a cannon just a couple years ago. So Biden's an idiot, as always. Yeah, I did that. And you know, just being a moron in public figure and keep saying stupid statements over and over again. But if I was a Democrat right now, a liberal Democrat, which I am not, I would try to pass a law very quickly that's very to the point when it comes to gun control. And I'm going to call it gun control. Now, I may not support all these things, but this is what I would put in my bill if I was a liberal Democrat. First off, the thing that just doesn't make sense to me is right now you, a young person can't buy a handgun until they're 21, but they can go out and buy a semi-automatic AR-15 and 30-round magazines or even a 100-round drum magazine at 18. And buy a semi-automatic shotgun at 18. To me, this isn't based in science, or if you want to call it that, or what's, I think, realistic. I'd much rather an 18-year-old have a handgun, a revolver, for self-defense than allow them to buy an AR-15. If I was to compare the two, I would say, well, I'd rather they have the revolver, but yet they can't do that. They can't purchase a handgun until they're 21, but that makes absolutely no sense to me. And of course, criminals can always get any weapon. So the bottom line is the first foundation you have to understand with any of these laws is it's our right to have guns to defend ourselves. And there's certain opportunities or certain situations where an AR-15 is an excellent weapon for self-defense. And so we need to just, this whole thing about banning assault rifles needs to just go away. And again, if I was a Democrat, I wouldn't even be going after assault rifles. This is what I would try to pass. I would switch the law that you can't get a semi-automatic weapon of any platform until you're 21. And at 18, you can get a handgun, revolver. You can get a pump shotgun. You could get a rifle that's not semi-automatic until you're 21. That's what I would, and I would put that very simple bill. And then, you know, whenever they talk about banning high capacity magazines, my first issue is I don't believe a 30 round magazine is a high capacity magazine. I think a 30 round magazine is a perfect magazine. 30 rounds is a good amount. Now, if you want to have a conversation about banning 100 round drum magazines for AR-15s, well, you could have that conversation. So why don't, if I was a liberal Democrat, I would add in my bill, no semi-automatics till you're 21, ban on ultra high capacity magazines, anything above 30 rounds. I think there is an argument for anything above 30 is a weapon of war. You could make that argument. And then I don't even really know how to define this, but they keep talking about this universal background checks. I mean, it sounds good. You know, so I don't know what's in it, so I don't know exactly whether I would support it or not. But if I was a liberal Democrat, I would add that. No semi-automatics till you're 21, ban ultra-high capacity magazines above 30, universal background checks. Then the fourth item that I would add, and this is the one that I definitely don't support, is some form of red flag law, but there has to be some repercussions if somebody uses it inappropriately. But again, if I was a liberal Democrat, I would just put those four things, and maybe not the red flag law, because the red flag laws may be better state or whatever. So let's just go with the three. You can't own a semi-automatic until you're 21. Universal ban on magazines over 30 rounds and universal background checks. And I would ram that or try to get that through Congress, just those three items. But here's the problem. Here's what I predict. They're not going to do this because they can't help to add, you know, pork and other stuff. All of a sudden, there'll be $100 million for Planned Parenthood. And then there'll be $30 million for this. And then there'll be $60 million for this. And then, you know, they'll come up with crazy stuff like banning any weapon with a caliber over a 22 or just crazy stuff that they know will never pass. And that's how you know Congress is worthless. Because right now, if Biden had any sense that God gave him, he would say, I'm going to get someone from the Senate and someone from the House to put through this bill. It could be one page. Very simple, one page, and then let everybody vote. I'm all for letting people vote. So let the individuals who say, I don't support those three things, let them say why it is they don't support them. And I'm good with that. But they can't do anything simple because they're all a bunch of idiots. And Congress, right now, you've seen, the Senate says that they're trying to work out a compromise while the House is saying, we're just going to ram through everything that we want, which has no chance of passing. So, you know, we're going through this whole thing with Uvalde and everything, brings it up again. You got Biden on the air saying enough is enough. You know, when are we finally going to do something? And my response is to that, dude, you're in freaking charge. Do something. You know, if you want to put through a law, you know, and have people vote. So all the Americans will see where the Congress people and senators, where they stand on these issues. And I'm good with knowing where they stand on these issues. And let's have a conversation instead of having these Thursday night Senate hearings in prime time over stuff that's just absolutely freaking stupid. Actually do something. And why don't you open up the Keystone Pipeline? That just, you know, that just drives me crazy how they say that we shut it down when that's actually a much safer way of getting oil through the nation, as opposed to putting them on the back of train cars and on semis, which costs a fortune to transport the oil. And, I, you know, I don't mind someone being a liberal, but just don't be a stupid liberal. Well, actually, maybe I do mind if they're a liberal. But, okay, so enough of my ranting and raving. So John St. Augustine's here with me, and we're going to talk about something very interesting. And you can bring John on whenever you want. We're going to talk about the Columbine shooting, which obviously should be dear to most of us who live in Colorado. Happened back in 1999. And so let me kind of set the background a little bit. So John St. Augustine was my boss when I worked at the El Paso County Sheriff's Office as a detective. And I specialized in computer crimes and high-tech stuff. So that's really where I came from. I worked on over probably 100 death investigations, 80 homicides. John has probably worked on 3 to 4 times more homicides. He was hired to look into the JonBenet murder. He was hired the Lacey Peterson murder out in California. So he has such a vast knowledge. And the thing he has on me, which really pisses me off, to be honest with you, is the guy is an elephant. He can remember names, places, numbers. I can't even tell you what I had for breakfast this morning. And John remembers everything. And he actually worked, also another one that I forget, is the Chuck E. Cheese in Denver. And John is like me somewhat from being a high-tech guy. He has a double E degree, and so he's got that technical background. So he's kind of that engineering thought process. And he created timelines because he actually showed me the presentation that he put together for Columbine, which actually has a timeline, has a bunch of pictures in it to go through. And John can explain to you, well, actually, no, I'll explain to you why, and he can correct me if I get it wrong. After Columbine, again, at first there's a morning, and then it's like, you know, everybody wants to know what happened and they want heads to roll. And that happened with Columbine as well. There was some theory that one of the cops that showed up on scene accidentally shot one of the students, and so the parents rightfully wanted to know exactly what happened. And John can explain the fact that the cops are pretty much all using 9mm. That was the big thing back then. Now a lot of them use AR-15s, which are the 223 rounds. Well, as it turns out, the perpetrators in this were also using 9mm rounds, which made the crime scene a little more confusing. So John was asked to go through, reinvestigate the Columbine shooting, create a timeline, and then show what evidence there was to show what really happened when with Columbine. So, John, you're with me. Did I give you a nice lead-in at that point?
Yeah. Thank you, Mark. Yeah. So, you know, for our listeners, you know, unfortunately, you know, with all the school shootings that have gone on over the last, you know, probably 3 decades, Columbine tends to be one that everybody kind of refers to, you know, when they talk about old school shootings. And it was because as a result of Columbine, there were a lot of things that were learned by law enforcement that, you know, when we talk about, you know, reviewing and analyzing cases, Columbine seems to be the one case that law enforcement really looks at to say, okay, what do we need to do? How can we improve? And just to kind of rewind a little bit for you, Mark, and the listeners. So why Columbine all became a big issue was there was some allegations. The media ran with an allegation that a Denver SWAT sergeant, a guy by the name of Sergeant Dan O'Shea, that he was involved in killing one of the kids at Columbine, a kid by the name of Daniel Rohrbaugh. Danny was a 15-year-old boy found outside of the school. In fact, for those of you that remember Columbine, you remember there was a helicopter. I think it was a News 9 copter that was actually flying around. They didn't have drones that they could, you know, release and take video. So they had actually a helicopter with a Denver sniper on the helicopter. And the idea was to kind of see and evaluate what was going on. Because, you know, what a lot of people don't understand is that when these things happen, you know, with technology, with cell phones, even in 1999, you know, Columbine is a fairly upper middle class affluent community. And a lot of kids had cell phones. And so, you know, when the initial calls, the initial 911 calls came in to the dispatch center, there was a thought that there was probably 7 or 8 shooters. And so one of the things that came up was that they were going to put, Denver PD was going to put a sniper on a helicopter because a couple of the kids had said that there was a sniper on the roof at Columbine. It actually was the HVAC guy who just happened to be working that April 20th. And so what happens is these two boys, right? Dylan Klebold and Eric Harris had a plan. And this plan was put in place, gosh, almost a year in advance. And, you know, they had an adult friend buy them some weapons. You know, they had made pipe bombs in their home. And the significance of April 20th was they wanted it to be around Hitler's birthday. And for those of you that remember, there were also two very significant events that happened on April 19th and April 20th in our country. And that was the bombing in Oklahoma City and the Waco, the Branch Davidian takedown by ATF, where multiple ATF agents were killed by David Koresh and his followers. And so in the documentation from Klebold and Harris, their plan was to kill as many kids as possible at Columbine. And so how this all surfaced, like I said, is that there was an allegation that Sergeant Dan O'Shea had killed one of these kids. And so we were asked, the El Paso County Sheriff's Office was asked to look into these allegations. And you know, part of the problem that you have with this is that there are so many different agencies that have their fingers in the actual investigations. You have people from the federal government. At our in Columbine, we had the FBI involved. We had the ATF involved. We had numerous agencies from the Denver metro area, Littleton, Jefferson County, Denver PD, Lakewood, you name it, Arapahoe Sheriff, Douglas County Sheriff. There were so many agencies that responded during this deal. So how it all kind of unfolds is Klebold and Harris had this plan, and the plan was to kill as many kids at Columbine. So what they did was they set up a diversionary tactic, right? One of those old Muhammad Ali kind of lead with one and then kind of come with a, you know, an uppercut type of thing. So their lead was to set up a pipe bomb a few miles away from the school. And as a result of this pipe bomb going off, there would be this mass response from local law enforcement and first responders to this bomb location. And while that is going on, they were then going to attack the school. And in fact, that is what happened. Bomb goes off. Officers and deputies and first responders, medical people are responding to this location away from the school, they begin their assault about 11:19 in the morning or in the afternoon on April 20th of 99. And they had documented that their plan was to kill as many kids as possible. So what they did was they started outside and just began shooting. What they were hoping was that the bombs that they had put inside of the school, that it would go off. They actually had, if there's anything fortunate about Columbine, is that they were using a lot of plastics as opposed to metals for these explosives. And so these explosives that they had timers on did not go off. So they resorted to their plan B, and their plan B was to kill as many kids on the outside, which is why our very first victims are kids like Rachel Scott, Emery Hawkholter, Richard Castaldo, a bunch of Denny Rowe, a bunch of kids who were outside. But the kids that we were talking about, why this whole case kind of unfolds, is that there were three boys in particular, Danny Rohrbaugh, Lance Kirkland and Sean Graves. All three of these kids were going together to go get some smokes, to go smoke at the smoker's pit at Columbine High School. So as this shooting begins, they are our very first victims. And so Klebold and Harris actually find out that Harris is the shooter, mows down these kids, kills Danny Robaugh almost instantaneously. And so, you know, that kind of began the whole Columbine shooting. And then they worked their way into the school. And what happens was they actually had a student resource officer who actually responded. His name was Deputy Smoker. He actually responded to the school within a couple of minutes and engaged in gunfire with Klebold and Harris, which caused Klebold and Harris to then retreat into the school. As they're retreating into the school, they then make their way into the library where there were approximately 56 kids, as well as some staff members, administrators, teachers, who were inside the library. And that is where the majority of the kids who were killed, they were killed inside of the library, unfortunately. You know, kids like Kyle Velasquez, Lauren Townsend, you know, there was just a number of kids. I believe there was 11, Mark, and for some reason right now, all of a sudden I'm drawing a blank, but there were 11 kids. Dave Sanders, who was one of the teachers, was actually inside the school. He actually interacts with the shooters, Klebold and Harris, in the hallway, and he's actually shot in his neck, and he ends up living for a couple hours and ends up eventually dying over, I believe, in the science wing. So how did this all come together? And I guess what your listeners are really wanting to know about is, you know, what do we know from Columbine? You know, what is similar between Columbine and what we know from now in Uvalde? And what I would tell you is that, you know, unfortunately, there's a lot of things that are unfortunately the same. You know, for instance, from 11:19 until 12:09, roughly 50 minutes, the shooting continued in Columbine. And one of the things that we learned in law enforcement as a result of Columbine, one of our lessons learned, was that you need to have immediate law enforcement response with lights, sirens, let the bad people know that, you know, you're on your way. And more importantly, what we learned from Columbine is that even if you're just one police officer, that you have to neutralize the threat, that you have to make entry into that school to get rid and neutralize the active shooter. That's what was learned from Columbine. And, you know, what we're hearing now is that there was, you know, a long period of time that went by. And you know, before we want the throats of every police officer that was there standing outside, you know, the 18 officers that they're reporting, what I would tell you is that we have to, you know, take a timeout and allow all the evidence to unfold. Like, how, you know, what is going on? Now, there is no excuse if, in fact, they were standing outside. I would tell you, you know, what we know 23 years later from Columbine is that you don't stand outside when there's an active shooter in a school. You go in and you neutralize the threat. But I will give those officers the benefit of the doubt until all of, you know, all of the evidence comes out. What a lot of people don't understand, Mark, is that this is just the beginning. A lot of people think that because the, you know, the killer, I think this kid was name was Ramos, that because he, you know, was involved in a shootout with law enforcement and he died, that there's nothing that's going to happen now. In fact, what I would tell you is quite the opposite. It's really progressing at a very high speed, because there's a lot of answers that need to be, and there's a lot of questions that need to be answered. You know, for instance, you know, were the kids, any of the kids, possibly killed by friendly fire? That was something that came up in Columbine. We learned, you know, that Sergeant O'Shea could have very well killed one of the kids. And that we, so we had to investigate that. We had to look at every ballistic in that case to see what was tied to Sergeant O'Shea. And more importantly, were any of these kids killed by friendly fire, by law enforcement? So that's going to be a big obstacle. You know, when you have 21 dead people, and a number of people that have been, you know, maybe have some other gunshot injuries, you got to find out, where is this all coming from? Is it coming from, in fact, Ramos? Is it coming from Border Patrol officers? Is it coming from Uvalde Police Department? Is it coming from school district officers? Who's it coming from? And so that is just one question that is going to take a lot of time. The other thing that you have to look at is, you know, was it communicated? You know, it's very easy to say these officers are standing outside, but what maybe is not going on is these officers may not know if there's other officers inside of this building while this was going down. It's really easy for us to look at it and go, hey, they're all standing outside. Why are they not inside? But until we can dissect all of the communications, right, all of the dispatch, get every officer that was on scene and actually listen to every one of them to find out where they were at the time of the shooting, you're not going to know whether these 18 officers were standing outside because they thought there was maybe 20 officers inside. And the worst thing you can do from a law enforcement perspective is to have crossfire. I mean, Mark, you know this, when you approach a vehicle, right? You don't want to be shooting your own people. And so you don't want people just going in if there's not, you know, if you already know there's some type of communication being relayed that there are officers in the building. They have made, you know, contact with the shooter, and now they're attempting to neutralize the threat. We don't know that. And right now, you know, I would tell you 2 weeks later after the shooting, I would venture to guess that law enforcement is still trying to figure that out, right? So we have a communication issue. We have issues involving autopsies. We have issues involving ballistics. We have a lot of forensic science, right? We don't know what's going on. I mean, it's been reported that one of the teachers who was married to one of the police officers was communicating with that officer, right? What is she telling him? Is he relaying to other officers like, hey, this is what's going on? And, you know, so again, right, what we learn, and unfortunately, you know, I had to be a part of Columbine in reinvestigating that. And what I will tell you is there was a lot of people who were angry at law enforcement. Like, why didn't you go do this? Why didn't you go do that? And yes, we've made some changes as a result of that. But what I would tell you is as we started to conduct our investigation, we started to see that, wait a second, right? Time out. There were officers there within a couple of minutes. There were officers who were engaging with the bad people. There were officers who were trying to figure out how many people were actually in the school. When you have 7 or 8 shooters, that's a lot different than 1 or 2, right? I mean, you have supposedly a sniper on the roof. You got, you know, and think about it, cell phones, right? Big school. Columbine's got, I don't know, 4, 5 or 6,000. It's a 5A school. They got a lot of students. Imagine all these students or a number of them getting on their phones and saying, hey, they're in the English wing, they're in the science wing, they're in the front office area, they're in the cafeteria, they're in the library. Now all that information has to be relayed to law enforcement. And what law enforcement is thinking is, what? Holy man, we got shooters everywhere. So before you just go in, right, and this is pre-Columbine, the thought was contain the situation, figure out what you have going on, try to negotiate, and then go in. What we learned post-Columbine is that that doesn't work. When you hear gunshots going off, you go in and you neutralize the threat. What we don't know about Uvalde is who was inside the school at the time the shooting began. And so, you know, seeing these officers outside, you can imagine that's 18, but I guarantee you there was probably 100 officers that responded to Uvalde, to Robb Elementary. There was a lot of police officers who are all responding. And guess what? There's nobody knows what's going on except the people who are communicating that information directly from dispatch. So, you know, what I would tell you is, you know, as critical as people are right now of law enforcement, especially this response, yes, there is no excuse if they heard gunshots and they knew that nobody was in there and they decided not to go in. That is not okay. But if they knew there were people in there and that they were engaging with the threat, then, you know, I would tell you, pump the brakes, wait till you hear everything that comes out. And, you know, Mark, you and I had this conversation, you know, not too long ago. And I would tell you, you know, the Texas authorities did not do themselves any favors. You know, fortunately, you know, they don't call people that were involved in things like Columbine or Parkland. But, you know, the best thing they could have done in the day after and the days after this, this particular incident would be just to say, look, this is an active investigation, ladies and gentlemen. We cannot give you specifics because we're still trying to figure out those specifics. We understand that you're hearing things that are very troubling, but until we can investigate this and actually understand what was going on, right, in that afternoon hours of when this elementary school shooting happened, I'm not at liberty to give you any of the specific details, right? Like, is the door open? Is it locked? Is it, you know, is it when you close it, does it automatically lock? Does it stay open? Was there a teacher that propped it open? We don't know any of that. But when you release stuff like that, right, the media is given essentially some information and they run with it, whether it's true or not, right? Just like in Columbine, they ran with, hey, Sergeant Dan O'Shea killed Danny Rohrbaugh. They literally said that. Yet they had no evidence to support that. And again, there's no accountability to the media about accurate reporting. It's about what is the juiciest story at this particular time. And so, you know, what we need to do with this shooting in Texas is, you know, allow the people. And if they don't have those people, they've got to bring in the expertise to have somebody actually go through this shooting literally second by second.
Right.
To find out what happened.
Right. You know, some of the problems, and I actually saw the initial press conference by the governor, is they're talking about, you know, what a great job law enforcement did. Mm-hmm. And then it was literally the next day that it's like, oh, wait a minute.
Wasn't
maybe
so good.
Not, you, right. You know, and so, you know, that really makes it even worse. And I can't even imagine, you know, a lot of, you know, everybody's carrying cell phones now, a lot of different videos and stuff. Mm-hmm. You know, and I know there's some videos, and I haven't seen them all, where they're videotaping where the parents and the bystanders are like, go in, you know, why are you here? Now they have to secure the scene. I get that they have to secure the scene,
right?
But I can't remember, I don't know, when they were sitting there telling them, you know, hey, what's going on? Is there gunfire in the background? I mean,
don't
can
know.
You imagine?
Yeah. I mean, but the thing is, you don't know. Is that friendly fire?
Well, I'm just saying, right? If or you're sitting the there
yeah.
as a parent,
right,
and your kid is in there,
sure,
and you're still hearing gunfire
yep.
while these cops are sitting here, and you're right. I mean, you're completely right. They may have already been 20 or 30 cops inside there, but now we know, I mean, do we know? I think we know that, you know, for about 40 or 50 minutes, they did nothing,
right.
You know, and of course the investigation is going to give us, you know, what really did happen. And one of the things I can definitely say, and you probably know this as well, is, you know, we've both worked numerous homicide scenes and the media is always on these events. Mm-hmm. So when we go into a house or whatever to process a crime scene, we know the media is outside, just outside the tape, and they've got their cameras set up. And I remember we used to always get the briefing, you know, watch what you say and do as you're walking out of the house, you know, so they don't get it on video.
Right.
And, you know, I'd work a crime scene and then I'd go home and I'd see the news at 10 o'clock where they're talking about the crime scene where I was at. And I'm like, what are they saying? Because, you know, I was there. I know what we did, or, you know, I know what happened.
Right.
But what they're saying is absolutely not true. And so those first media reports, you know, can really be pretty crazy. I want to kind of address, and if people have questions.
Yeah, sure.
I'm watching the, I don't know if you have it up, but I'm seeing some of the comments.
Uh-huh.
Now, understand this, and I do want to say this because somebody says, you know, that it is a police officer's job to take a chance. And that is 100% correct.
Absolutely.
It is not the job of a cop to do a suicide run, but a cop should understand when they become a cop that their job is to put their life on the line or take risks.
I don't disagree with you. I would tell you 90% of the officers that are out there will take that approach.
We'll absolutely do that. And we know what the active shooter training.
Right.
Part of the goal, and I mean, I don't hate to say this, but one of the reasons you go in is to redirect. I mean, they're sitting there shooting people, and all of a sudden they know law enforcement engages them, which is typically going to be with gunfire. They're going to redirect their efforts at law enforcement. If right. they know, like you said, with the lights and sirens, you know, hey, the cops are here.
Right.
We know that if they're confronted, they typically stop shooting people. They interact with law enforcement or they take their own lives and they say, you know, the gig is up,
right.
You know, so we know that's true. And so officers need to know this. And that's the thing. And that really happened at, Parkland in Florida?
The
SRO was like, hey, you know, I don't want anything to do with this. You know, that's when people started questioning, you know, wait a minute, you know, as cops,
right?
You need
but
to
I will tell you, Mark, I mean,
even
in the park. Yeah, but sorry to interrupt you, but even in the Parkland deal, you know, I was reading something recently about that. And, you know, the media immediately painted Peterson as a horrible police officer. But you know, if you hear his testimony, he says, like, you know, I had no idea what was going on. This was chaotic. I believe me, you know, in tears, he's saying, if I knew that kids were dying, I would have been inside of there. Now, you know, of course, he has the benefit of hindsight to say that now. But what I would tell you about Uvalde is that if, in fact, there were no police officers inside of that school when this was going down, then that is a problem. That is a huge problem. All I'm saying is that we need to allow the investigation, right? And the best thing that Texas can do is allow a third party to actually conduct the investigation, right? To not appear as if there's any type of favoritism or trying to hide anything, is go in and investigate this and truly look at everything that went down that afternoon. And if you know what, we find out that police officers did not go in, then by all means, the public has every right to be upset, because it is police officers' job.
But understand this, I hope this comes out in the investigation. And this has happened to every cop. When you arrive on scene, you're tasked. You're given something to do by the supervisors.
Yeah, sure. Sometimes. I mean,
typically.
Yeah.
Now, I really want to find out, you know, because there was cops outside. A timeline is going to be critical. I mean, you've got to have a good timeline.
Yep.
So when we're seeing these videos of these officers standing out, you know, keeping the parents out of it's, you know, ironic. The parents are willing to go in unarmed,
right,
you know, and they're keeping them out.
Sure.
At that same time, are there cops outside that door? And there's so much confusion.
Right.
I mean, I think it's going to come down that, again, another learning lesson like Columbine is you don't negotiate with a psychopath. I mean, he's got a goal in mind, just like with Columbine. The goal was to kill as many people as possible. That's, you know, the whole mental illness and all this. They don't want to negotiate. That's not part of the plan. And I really want to see, you know, if Uvalde was like Columbine from the standpoint that, you know, they didn't go in when they could have. There's still a lot of questions. I still hear this stuff, and I don't know if it's true or not, that the door opened outwards and they needed a crowbar. The door was, you know, we'll get to the truth. But again, like some of the people are saying in the comments, it doesn't help with the family. Right now,
they have every right to be upset.
They're past the mourning phase.
Yes, they have every right to be upset.
They're pissed.
I can tell you Danny Rohrbaugh's family was absolutely, even a year later, were extremely upset. And, you know, I guess the one thing that made me feel a little better about it is after he actually got the opportunity to show the timeline and show the facts of the case, the tears started rolling down the families, you know, they started rolling down their eyes, and they were like, for the first time, I understand what happened at Columbine, right? Because they're getting everything from the media. They're getting things from, you know, different sources, not the actual source of, you know, the incident. And so they're drawing their own conclusions based on this information that's being presented to them. And the same unfortunate thing is being presented to the family. You got family members who have every right to be upset. And you know, if law enforcement did not go in, you're darn right, they should be upset. Because that is the job of law enforcement, is to go in there and neutralize a threat. And if they did not do that, you know, I'm sure some people are going to lose jobs. And here's the other part of it, Mark. I mean, what is going to happen, mark my words, because it happened in Columbine, is that there's going to be lawsuits against the gun manufacturer. There's going to be lawsuits against, you know, probably the Uvalde Police Department. There's probably going to be lawsuits against the school district. Right. There's going to be lawsuits against as many people right now. I think they've even got a lawsuit against the estate of the shooter, of Ramos's estate. So
what does he have?
Right. What does he have? But my point is that
he's got nothing. I mean,
right. Which now goes back to this whole thing with these lawsuits. It's going to be extremely important for law enforcement to get the investigation done, to do it, go through it. And whether it looks bad or it looks good, it doesn't really matter. Present the facts, and then allow allow, you know, the family to at least get some level of closure, right? Now, if they messed up, guess what's going to happen? People are going to lose their jobs. And more than likely, people are going to, you know, there's going to be lawsuits against a number of people.
Yeah. You know, I'm a little concerned to add a little bit of politics. I know you don't really like to get into the whole politics thing.
Right.
You know, I guess the mayor asked DOJ to do an investigation. And you're right. You're spot on. It has to be an independent organization. And right. Pretty much everybody in Texas went. You know, so
Texas Rangers, everybody.
Because I have to tell you, I personally, if I was the mayor of Uvalde, I would want the Texas Rangers to do the investigation. Because I have a lot of respect for the Texas Rangers. We've worked with them before on the Tom Clements homicide. These are people of integrity, but unfortunately, it's Texas. And that's, you know, I do not have confidence in Garland. He announced the members and they all have like mega million years of experience. But unfortunately, the Department of Justice is political. Right. You know, they're appointees of the president and they have an agenda. And so everyone will always be wondering, you know, are they going to slant this towards, you know, whatever? But I just hope we get some questions around that stupid door.
When I first heard about it, obviously your heart sinks because, you know, I think it's just happening way too often. But the other part of it is, you know, you start to see, you know, people drawing opinions based on very little fact. And for me, we've worked together on many cases. You know, an investigation is about gathering facts, and these facts may be harmful to the profession. And you know what? It's better to be transparent and show that, you know, that there was some mess ups, or show that, hey, they did do everything that they were trained to do. I would venture to guess, just based on what I'm hearing, is that, you know, there's enough fault to go around to a number of people. You know, they've been blaming that chief down there, that he said, don't go in, that it was a surrounding call out, that, you know, there was no longer a threat. Again, right? When was that given? Was that given in the minutes after the shooting? Was there still an active shooter happening? How do we know that? You know, because if you think about it, to kill 21 people, it ain't going to take that long. If you got think about a school classroom with kids who are easy targets, because what are they doing? They're all in shock. They're all in fear. They're all probably hiding under a table. They're all probably laying down if they had the opportunity to do it. And just think with any weapon, how quickly you can kill 21 people. It doesn't take but a couple minutes.
And that's a great point.
It doesn't take hours. You can go in and kill many, many people in a short amount of time.
When I was on the school board, you know, that's when the Sandy Hook thing happened. Mm-hmm. And there's been another transition of shelter in place.
Right.
And there's a lot of debate right now on shelter in place versus, you know, run.
Right.
You know, run.
Right.
And, you know, when we were kids, we had fire drills. We even had nuclear explosion drills.
Oh, yeah.
And yeah, I remember being on the school board and saying, hey, maybe we should start having active shooter drills. And everyone's like, oh, for God's sake, stop. You can't do that. If you had an active shooter drill where you're actually educating the kids, hey, you know, if we call an active shooter, you know, to actually have some drills to run. I mean, basically just run, right. You know, or fight, you know, the whole fight or flee, you know, flee. They would go crazy in the media, and some parents would go like, you're traumatizing our kids. Well, are we traumatizing your kids over a fire drill? Because let me tell you something. No kid has died in a school fire in probably the last 100 years, but yet we still have fire drills.
Right.
And, you know,
I'm not aware. Yeah, you're right. Yeah. I'm not aware of any school fires of recent.
No, there hasn't been. I know I did the research back then, and it's like, we're losing a lot more kids, you know, with active shooters than we are with fires. Forget the fire drill. We should be doing active shooting drills. Now, somebody asked a question, and I definitely have an opinion on this.
Okay.
As a school board member as well, about arming teachers. Now, I said something last Wednesday to Chuck, because I know Chuck agrees, we should be arming teachers.
Yeah.
That actually came up when I was on the school board, And I opposed arming teachers, but I strongly supported arming staff. And I made the distinguish, you know, now, if we had a teacher who had experience, training, knowledge, and whatever, I would have been open to that. But I felt that we had some staff who are actually not actively in the classrooms teaching that we have armed. And of course, I'm not going to have that conversation because I don't know what they currently do now. I am all for arming staff completely. I would be open to arming some teachers if they had the experience. When it's a self-defense situation, right, guns are a great thing. So if you want to express your opinion.
Yeah, you know, Mark, I mean, if you know, even teaching at the university, I've had a few kids ask me about that. I've had other law enforcement people ask me about that because, you know, they know I was involved in Columbine. And, you know, here's the problem. I mean, Mark, you've seen it. You know, I've taught it probably at least 15 academies, at least that, you know, if 15 years of teaching academy, some had multiple, you know, academies a year. And we have trouble having police officers that are going through a recruit academy engaging in lethal force. I mean, you got to remember, it's one thing to arm somebody. It's a whole nother thing to ask somebody, right, during a very traumatic event to actually, without any very specific training, right? And when you say teachers, you know, I know a lot of teachers that have, you know, prior special forces, prior law enforcement experience, you know, but does every school have that, right? And what I would say is we have to be careful. I'm not opposed to it, but, you know, the other part that you have to understand is, especially in something like this, where you, you know, you have police officers responding, but don't go in. And now you add it into the equation. There's another armed individual in there and they don't know who's friend and who's foe. And they're like, wait a second, is that teacher good, bad? I mean, and that's not communicated. You're going to have some issues with, you know, with potentially a teacher being killed by law enforcement. Now, you know, is it worth that to save the lives of 19 innocent kids? I suppose you have to ask the family of that teacher, you know, man, that is a hot
and
potato.
Another point.
It's a political hot potato, you know.
Yeah, and I'm sorry for interrupting. No. You know, Sanders making some good points, and I did believe that when she said about arming teachers that, of course, we would give them training. We give law enforcement officers all kinds of training. You know, when I went through my academy, we must have shot 2,000-3,000 rounds, and you go through these scenario based stuff to try to. I don't want to say get them emotionally, but to get that adrenaline going and see how they do.
Muscle memory, right?
Right. We still have officers that fail.
Yep.
You know, where they get out on the street and they mess it up.
Yep.
So certain teachers or staff, you know, I don't even know if I really want to distinguish, will do great if the scenario happened.
Sure.
The worst nightmare, I know when I was on a school board, our fear was, what if a student knew that this teacher was armed and disarmed them and took the weapon that was provided to them by the school district, and then they killed other students with that.
You know what a lot of people don't know? Look at the statistical data of officers who get killed. Guess how they get killed? The majority of officers who are killed with their own weapon.
Yeah. So it's
so you, you
it
gotta,
is all about,
you know,
training.
You gotta really, you can say training, and then again, I would tell you, you know, you can train, but when the actual situation goes down, you do resort to your training when you're in a stressful situation. However, what I would tell you is, you know, I think that's something that needs to be carefully evaluated before we just say train these.
Well, some teachers are going to be very confident, and if they get the training and they can show proficiency.
Sure.
So I think it needs to be scenario based. So the statement of let's arm all the teachers, I definitely could not support.
Yeah.
There's some teachers that would just quit. They'd be like, you know, I don't want a weapon. And if they don't want it, they shouldn't have it. But the bottom line is, even if they don't perform 100% like law enforcement, they're still going to deter a shooter. And I still think one of the best things to do, let me start with this. One of the worst things to do is put a sign up in front of a school that says gun-free zone. I mean, we need to be ripping all those signs down, and we need to be replacing them with armed staff. you know, it's kind of like putting out in front of your house ADT security. They'll move on to the next house,
right,
or whatever.
Right. But crime prevention, right? I mean,
yeah, you never want to say,
right, that kind of stuff.
There's no guns at this school. There needs to be guns at every school. There need to be trained personnel, whether you want to call it teachers, staff, law enforcement. I really don't care. Every school needs to be secured. We need to be giving training to the kids, staff, to the teachers. We need to have armed personnel that are willing to confront a shooter when it happens. And we need to make our schools safe.
No doubt. We need to make our schools safe. There's no doubt about that. I think, you know, there's just got to be some careful evaluation of who we're going to put. And, you know, for me, I would prefer to have law enforcement. You know, that's why, if you remember, Mark, when we went to school in the 70s and 80s, right? I mean, I was in junior high and high school in the 80s. We had no student resource officer. There were no cops at our school. There were cops at our school if you did something wrong. One of the students, right, got in a fight or stole something at a local convenience store. They were at the school, right, because you did it during lunchtime. But now, you know, you have student resource officers, and they've allotted money for this purpose in a lot of these communities. They have a specific budget for school safety. And so, you know, I would prefer, I mean, this is again, right, we don't know what everybody's situation is, but my preference would be to put somebody like law enforcement in that capacity, to where they're the point of where if there's an active shooter, they're the ones that are going to be armed, you know.
Right. And that's the best scenario.
That is the best case scenario.
If you have the finances to do that now. Sure. And there's some questions about the school buildings. We've got just a few more minutes. Uh-huh. Understand, and I want to make sure that people understand this, and I think I actually said this the last time I was on the show, is schools have changed their designs. Mm-hmm. You know, since Columbine, the designs of schools have totally changed. One entry, multiple exits. Okay. And so all the kids have to go in. You know, I remember when I was a kid, there's probably five different ways you could get into a school. But only one way, and you have vestibules where you have security there, you know, things like that. The teachers are getting trained on different things. And I talked about this film that they're putting on some glass and stuff. You might even see it at certain schools.
I think every school, you know, and the problem is that, you know, there's some schools that have been around for, you know, 50, 75 years that don't have that kind of infrastructure. But what needs to happen, Mark, is that there has to be some kind of threat assessment made at every one of these schools, because every school is a little different. You know, there's some that
right.
have a lot
They're
of
all unique. Not,
yeah, you're going to need to, you know, change up maybe the way you do business at these older schools that don't have that kind of infrastructure. But, you know, you got to spend the money to make these places safer for our children, whether it's arming law enforcement, whether it's going in and finding out threat assessments where you find out where the most vulnerability is, right? Whether it's a door, a window, where exactly is the vulnerability? The playground, what, you know, how do you get kids, right, you know, safe in a very timely fashion? So, you know, I think, you know, this is constantly going to be, I think, on the radar in the years to come until we kind of get a grasp of how we're going to handle this. I can assure you, once this investigation is done, there's going to be a lot of heads that are going to be rolling, because I can assure you there's going to be some mistakes that were made, and people are going to want, and rightfully so, the families want to know that their kids were, you know, are safe at school. And if they're not, and somebody made a mistake that was, you know, responsible for stopping or neutralizing the threat and didn't do it, it's going to be a problem.
Well, the thing in conclusion that I want to say is that for me, I believe in the view of guns save lives. And I know there's individuals that want to focus that, you know, guns take lives. You know, a lot of guns have saved lives. There's been shootings. I know there was one in West Virginia years ago where some students went out to their cars, got their weapons, and confronted the shooter. And so having good people with weapons is a solution to a lot of this stuff. But again, so we've talked about this and stuff, and I need to kind of wrap it up a little bit. I'm trying to see if there's any last minute stuff. There's obviously a lot of variance when it comes to gun laws and sensible gun laws or whatever. And I get that. Arming teachers, great conversation. Again, I support arming staff. 100%. Train them. You have to give them tons of training to those who want to be trained. And we do need to make our school safe, but we also need to look into mental health and all kinds of other things. But one of the things that drives me crazy is when I hear politicians say, this only happens in America. That is not true. If you actually go out on the internet right now, you will see that there's been some pretty big mass shootings. There was one in Africa, I think, just last week.
Yeah, at a church in Nigeria.
Yeah, so to say that this only happens in America is a bunch of baloney. And the way you stop bad people with guns is good people with guns. So they just sent me that we still have a couple minutes. And John, is there anything else in the next minute that you want to say?
You know, I know, you know, this probably is not along the lines of listeners, but we have to do something, Mark. This is, you know, we keep talking about it. I mean, it's been 23 years since Columbine, and we know, I can't imagine, you know, I have two kids that are adult kids. I can't even imagine sending your kids off to school and wondering whether or not they're going to come home alive. Like, how do you go through that thought process? For me, you know, I hate politics, Mark, and I will tell you that, you know, for me, whatever's going on is obviously not working. We've got to get, you know, people on both sides of the aisle to work together to figure out how do we get on front of this, because all we keep doing is chasing it.
I don't think they do anything.
Exactly. We just
all they do is sound outraged and then do nothing.
Right.
So,
and that's what I'm saying. We gotta do something. You know, you mentioned a few things, right? Mental health is a problem, but you know what, Mark, mental health was a problem when we were growing up. You know, there were a lot of kids who had mental issues. There were kids, I think one of your commenters talked about, you know, bringing guns to school. I was part of that crowd. I remember some of our cowboys who had a 12 gauge or their rifle on their actual rifle rack on the back of their pickup.
Right. And I saw the same thing.
I went to school here in Colorado Springs. I remember those days. That you'd never be able to get away with that, you know, today. So, you know, we've got to get people to kind of put the politics aside, think about what we got to do to get our kids safe. And that's really what it's about, is what can we do better? And you know what? It's not going to be cured overnight. We've got to take some steps to do something. And
well, then, right? Yeah, exactly. So, okay. Well, I think we've kind of wrapped it up. Hopefully.
Thanks for having me.
You know, obviously there's been some entertainment, you know, people have been commenting to each other, and I appreciate everybody's views on these things. And I know that even within conservatives or Republicans, whatever you want to say, there's a vast range of views and stuff. Mm-hmm. But hopefully everyone has had a good time on Wild Wednesdays as opposed to Fridays. But I'm sure Chuck and Julie will appreciate to see everybody this Friday, and have a safe night. Everybody have fun.
Be safe. Thank you, Mark. Thank you for having me on.